Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. Now Craig, as we usually do, we'll be chatting about the precious metals, and this week, kind of a choppy week for gold, but for the most part, just sideways. We are seeing $10 to $15, sometimes even $20 moves just this week, but overall, gold from the start of the week to where it is now, it's for the most part flat, which is not a bad thing because you know what? That does show potentially a bit of a consolidation from that recent run. And I know some people are calling it a breakout. Either way, holding right around that 1850, even above 1850 level, that is encouraging for the gold bulls. Craig, what matters now? What are you going to be watching as we move into a shortened trading week next week and then close to the end of the month and then December? Then we're done with this year.
Isn't that something? Done with the year. Where did it go? And man, next year, I'm afraid it's going to be a doozy, right? We have congressional elections again down here in the States. I mean, it's just going to be madness, but we'll worry about that when we get there. You're right, Corey, in terms of price, what'd we go up? $80, almost $100 over the course of just a couple of weeks. So to consolidate that in a week where we're going sideways, I suppose, is somewhat encouraging. Got kind of a key level on the chart, looks to be 1880 above there on a daily close, and we got a shot at 1920, and moving back into slightly green territory for the year for gold. I think we finished up last year at 1906. So that trend is going, it seems to be in the right direction. Silver obviously has run into trouble at its 200-day moving average. On the December contract, which is still the front month, it's about maybe, oh, what was it yesterday, 25.44, something like that. And it's banged up there 4 or 5 days in a row and not been able to get through. Above there, you probably set off some buy stops of some existing shorts and make a quick run to 26. Now, in the face of all that, we've got the December contracts going off the board. December is always unusual because it's a front month and a delivery month for both gold and silver. It's the only time that happens all year long. And with October not really being a heavy volume front month, I mean, we've been focusing on December gold since the August contract went off the board in July. Okay, so December is always a very volatile, or the end of November is always a volatile period as you price the December options and then the December contract goes off the board into delivery. And we're entering that period as well. The options price and expire next Tuesday. The COMEX close next Tuesday, the 23rd. And the contract goes off a week from Monday, 29th, I believe. And so there's always going to be pressure. You know, it's rife with, I know you don't like this word, Corey, but it's rife with manipulation because, because if you're a bank or any big trader, I mean, say you've got a big spread on, you know, of several hundred contracts and you want to take off one side and then put it back on or whatever, you know, if you have the ability to leg out of that, that gives you quite a little bit of leeway to, you know, say you want to, say you got a spread on, right? And you are long at a certain price and short, you know, the other side of that thing. Well, what you do is you dump your long first and see if price goes down before you cover the short side. Okay. These things happen in all markets, not just gold and silver. And so you get all these different forms of shenanigans as you get toward the end of the month. And so we've got that stuff hanging over us as well. The monthly close will be important, as is every weekly close, it seems these days. And you know, once we get this behind us and we flip the calendar over into December with, you know, and we start getting tax loss selling, and then usually the shares tend to rally once that period is behind us. I would imagine December might be a pretty good month, but again, putting this all back together, we've probably got some continued choppiness for the next 6 or 7 sessions.
Yeah, Craig. Well, there's always a little bit of shenanigans at the end of one contract rolling to the next, and the December is a critical one every year. But a lot of gold investors are encouraged that it did at least get above that first level of resistance, which was around 1836. It was a prior peak, and it was there were some other trend lines and moving averages lining up with that. We did get above that in the gold price, and a lot of people are looking at 1900, the round number, as important on the monthly and quarterly charts. But you brought up that 1920, 1921, which was the all-time high from 2011, if people remember back to that, and also the recent peak from this year, which lined up with that. So what do you think will give this market the juice to get through those levels? What kind of fundamental drivers are you looking at to get gold moving a little higher?
Well, it's kind of a momentum thing, I suppose, Shad. You know, the trend has been lower all year long. You know, against what are some pretty solid fundamentals of sharply declining real interest rates, that sort of thing. But the trend has just been this string of lower highs and lower lows. And so it's like, well, why do I want to play around? Why do I want to speculate? Why would I want to own gold futures on the long side if it's just a string of lower highs and lower lows? Everybody knows that fundamental story, though. So a lot of folks may be just waiting to see that trend change. Well, one of the trend changes you get, you know, maybe you cross a few key moving averages, like gold moved above its 50-day and then its 200-day. Well, that's interesting. And everybody was waiting for that 1836 level because price had been up there three times in the late summer and early fall and fell back both times. And so getting above there ran some stops and pumped price quickly to 1850 and then has continued higher. And so now all of a sudden, ooh, wait a second, maybe we've got a higher high on our hands. And then extending that out further back at the end of May, 1st of June maybe, we had tapped up to about that 1920 area. So now all of a sudden you get above there and you get a second higher high. Well, okay, wait a second. Now maybe we're onto something. Maybe gold's finally rushing to catch up versus those fundamentals, like I keep referring to, the negative real interest rates. So it's kind of a momentum thing. If we can start to pick off some of those factors and indicators, then the thing kind of can build on itself. So 1920, yeah, that's an interesting historical level. No doubt about that. That's September 6th, 2011. And then again, back at the end of May this year, on our way down, making a lower high. So that'll be a level to watch if we can get rolling in December, turn the annual 2021 number to green. We got to get above 1906 to do that. Get above 1920, we might be able to extend a little further even before we flip to 2022.
Craig, what are your thoughts on silver, too? We have talked a lot about gold, but silver has been, unfortunately, kind of boring. And I know the positive aspect about silver over the last year and a half was the fact that it wasn't dropping to the same degree that gold was. It was more just moving sideways in this general range, 21 being the low, let's say about 30 is the high. We're in more or less the middle of that range right now. But again, silver has been a little bit more boring than gold, hasn't had the same, in a way, technical confirmation that gold has had with some of the recent positive moves. How are you viewing silver in this environment?
Dude, I tell you what, I'm just, you know, I almost get the feeling like I'm just kind of waiting on it. And I think a lot of people feel the same way, because not just as like a trade, but as kind of a fundamentally driven investment, because we've seen what's happened with so many of the base metals, you know, that it's just exploded in their own time this year, whether it's iron ore or zinc, copper even got back to all-time highs not too long ago. And it's like, well, when's it going to be silver's turn? You mentioned the chart. The chart has almost a textbook classic example, like open up the dictionary and find a picture of an inverse head and shoulder bottom. The chart's got that. In fact, even on the head, 22 was such an important level that everybody was watching, and for one day it dropped below 22, ran a bunch of sell stops, and then immediately reversed back above 22 the next day, and that was the low. And now it's climbing back higher. That 200 day is going to be critical up there around, like I said, 2540, 2545. Because again, above there, you get to 26. 26 has been an important level. And then again, the thing begins to build on itself. But what has even a greater interest for me is this idea of it just kind of catching fire in the sense that some of these other base metals have done. Corey, I just saw a tweet yesterday from several different people put this out yesterday about the LME, the London Metals Exchange. All of their base metals are currently trading in backwardation. Now, there was a story a couple of weeks ago about copper and how they were almost out of copper at the LME. And what's going on there? Well, you know, in this supply chain disruption, people wanting, you know, no, I don't want to take my chances and wait for a delivery. And I know I'm going to need a bunch of, you know, tin or zinc or whatever. And I know I need it in March. Well, hell, I'm not waiting till March. I want it now. And so you start buying at spot and taking immediate delivery. Well, all that buying of spot pushes the spot price up above the futures price, and that is backwardation. That's a sign of a shortage of the actual physical commodity. And that's what I said. Every single base metal at the LME is in backwardation. So what if that happens in silver? You know, what if some of the big silver users, you know, whether it's the solar industry or the battery industry or whatever, you can get a little freaked out. You know, and they see what's going on elsewhere. They say, hey, you know what, We better get our hands on this stuff now, because we, you know, with all the other supply chain issues, the last thing we need to do is all of a sudden get delays in some of this, you know, base products that we need. And then you just get, you know, if that eventually ripples over to silver, well, we're not going to be talking about 2550 much longer. So there are a number of things that kind of piece together. It's not just, you know, an inflation hedge or a inverse to the dollar. In this unique time of 2021, there's a few other things that could push it higher too. And so that's why it's got my attention.
Absolutely, Craig. And like you mentioned, all the other base metals have really run, whether it's nickel, aluminum, copper, zinc, lead, they've all been trucking higher. Tin is going crazy. I mean, it's iron ore.
Yep.
So it could be silver's turn soon. And if that inverse head and shoulders pattern that's very textbook that you talked about plays out, it would have an upside target of around $28. So it could be a nice move in silver to get a little bit more momentum going. I would be remiss if we didn't cover the potential Fed policies. I know that's a topic you follow very closely. And there's been a lot of news out recently about the potential that they may need to speed up their tapering and not just do $15 billion a month in reduction, but maybe reduce it by $30 billion or $40 billion a month, rip the Band-Aid off and get it done quicker, maybe as soon as February or March. If the Fed was to do that, because the idea would be they would get it done quicker so they could start hiking rates to deal with the runaway inflation and the hotter CPI numbers, what do you think that could do to the precious metals markets?
It'd be interesting. I don't know if they can. They may try. You know, there's a lot of folks talking about a potential policy error that the Fed eventually tightens into a weakening economy, that they've waited too long. I mean, the Fed often does because they're more reactive than proactive. I don't know, Shad, if they'll do that, if they'll try to speed up that schedule, because they are so pragmatic in the way they do things. They'd run the risk of spiking interest rates, particularly on the kind of longer end. All of a sudden, you got the 10-year note moving up through 2%, that sort of thing. And you know, you recall when they tried to run this whole kind of game of mirrors back from 2013 to 2018, they did that over a period of 5 years. Letting interest rates gradually rise, ran off $700 billion of their balance sheet, let it mature, that kind of thing. And we finally got to the point about 3 years ago, right now, in November of 2018, where the 10-year note got to 3%. And man, everything really began to collapse and seize up. The stock market fell like 20% in December of 2018, leading up to like an emergency president's, working group on capital markets meeting on Christmas Eve. Remember all that? And then the Fed finally been, you know, kind of reverse course and interest rates started falling, and they formalized that reverse course in June of 2016, started cutting rates. Well, that was a 5-year process before we got. I don't know if they could go 5 months this time of, you know, playing this charade that they're going to be hiking rates and tapering QE, because I don't know where the money's going to come from if they, you know, to keep buyers in the Treasury market if they step away. And the U.S., whether it's public money or private money, simply cannot afford higher interest rates. And we're already, the line item interest on the national debt, something like $550 billion this year, this fiscal year, because they've run the average maturity and average interest rate down so far that it's like 1.6% on $30 trillion. Well, geez, if all of a sudden they're paying 3.2% on $35 trillion, I mean, we're talking $1 trillion a year just in debt service, interest costs. So anyway, I just don't think they can allow it. And so it would be, you rip Band-Aid off, as you said, and just see what happens. I just think the Fed is probably too pragmatic to go that route. They're more apt to try to manage it down. And then, as Powell even said a couple of weeks ago, add QE back on if they need to. I mean, that's just as likely as a possibility. And in the last part of that puzzle is, as we discussed last week, is Powell replaceable? You know, a lot of talk in the last week since the three of us discussed it last Friday. A lot of talk about whether Lael Brainard is going to be nominated to replace Powell. So discussions on CNBC today with Mohammed El Arian saying that's who he thinks should be Brainard. Well, okay. I mean, if they're going to spend trillions of dollars now on climate change and all the other stuff that they want to try to address through deficit spending, that money's got to come from somewhere. There might be $1.5 trillion locked up in reverse repo every night, but I don't think that's all flowing, you know, directly into the Treasury market as to replace the Fed if the Fed steps away. So anyway, that's a long answer, Shad. Obviously, it's a complex question, and they've got a lot of balls in the air that they got to try to manage. I'm not sure speeding up their QE is a direction that at least the Powell-led Fed would want to go.
Hey, fair enough, Craig. Who knows what's going to happen right. with the Fed? We are just starting to see the taper, right? So right. what they do, if they even change that, and what factors could actually make them change that, it's all just guesswork right now heading into next year. But yep. it's going to make for an interesting year, and undoubtedly, we're going to be talking a lot about it. Craig, we'll wrap it up here, but I know next week, American Thanksgiving. I hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving. We'll chat again in 2 weeks. Thanks for your time, Craig.
All right, boys. Take care.